Calor Duhas.
And welcome back to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And I think we're going to switch up the format a bit, right?
Yep.
We're going to do, instead of recapping, we're going to fast cap it. Because, frankly, you can just go on Wikipedia and read the recap if that's what you need. Once we get through with the fast cap, though, we'll get into basically the meat of the podcast, what we want to discuss. Because life is too short to listen to two fat men talking on a microphone. So let's get into fast cap. So we start off, we see Moat Cailin in the intro credits. We have a new director. But we go to the House of Black and White, and we are introduced to the poison pools, right? So people come here, they drink the poison, and they die.
Okay, I heard you mention that, and I totally did not completely... I did not know that that's what that was going on there.
Did you not see the guy die, and they carried him off?
I saw him die. At first, I didn't realize when he was drinking that it was poison.
Yes. So those are pools of poison.
Okay, that's a lore thing that I think I missed.
That's what I got gathered from the television show. So, the guy drank from the cup, then he died, then carried him down. It's dark, dark, dark in the House of Black and White. We see Arya. She's basically doing janitor duty, which she's not happy with. But all men must serve, right? Faceless men most of all. And then there's a short discussion between her and Hagar about there's only one god, because it has all the statues of the gods, right? It's the many-faced god. So the faceless men believe there's one god, and these are just faces of the god. The seven or whatever. But there's really only one god, and the girl knows his name. Of course, we know that the name of God, the god, and what is his name?
Death.
And what do we tell Death?
Not today.
Not today.
It makes me wonder if he isn't the Bravosi Swordmaster.
I don't think he is, but there's been a lot of fan talk wishing that were true. After House of Black and White, we go to King's Landing, and we see that they're cheering Margaery's name. It is the marriage of Tommen and Margaery. Cersei's not too happy about it. She closes the curtains on her little carriage box.
Everyone was chanting for her.
Yeah. And then right after the marriage, we go to the consummation of the marriage, and I guess he's...
Little pillow talk.
Yeah, he doesn't last long, but he's enthusiastic. So, but this is where we see Margaery begin working her wiles on Tommen against his mother. In a nice way. You know, it's not like, hey, you should totally dispose of your mother. It's like, hey, wouldn't your mother be more happy in Casterly Rock? Also... As long as she's here, you'll always be her little baby, right? Playing at two sides here on Tommen. Then right after that, we see Cersei tries her hand at turning Tommen against Margaery, right? So kind of undermining Margaery's authority. But it didn't work. And later on, we see Margaery is talking about the sexcapades with her maidens, in which Cersei crashes. And basically begins to kiss Margaery's ass. Any help you need. But the whole time, Margaery is totally cracking on Cersei. Hardcore. And Jesse really appreciated this scene, because anytime Cersei gets a dose of of humiliation...
Her own bitchery back.
A dose of humiliation, it makes Jesse smile.
And we switch to Moat Cailin, where we have the Boltons talking. And then we find out pretty soon after that that the marriage proposal that Baelish is going to submit isn't his own.
That's right. It's between who?
Sansa and Ramsay.
Ramsay Bolton.
And then we quickly...
The newly legitimized Ramsay Bolton. So he used to be a Snow, Ramsay Snow. He was a bastard. His father legitimized him after his conquest of Moat Cailin, right? A couple seasons ago or last season. But before they get there, Sansa gets wind of what Baelish is trying to do, right? Baelish begins explaining. And she's like, there's no way in hell I'm going to do that. They betrayed my father. Or my family. They betrayed Rob, not her father. At least not directly. It was after he was dead. Yes. Wow, Baelish is very Machiavellian, right? I mean, he is a master manipulator. Manipulator right into going there and doing what we don't know yet, but we'll get to that in a talking point later. So it convinces her to go seek revenge by going to Moat Cailin and possibly marrying Ramsay Bolton. And we see Brienne and Pod have seen that they have arrived at Moat Cailin. We go into some Brienne and Pod backstory. Then we go to the wall, and we see that Jon Snow has turned down Stannis' offer of legitimacy, and that he has basically left the wildlings in Jon's charge. So it's up to Jon what he does with the wildlings. And we see a little bit of mutiny and how Jon deals with that. And we go back to Moat Cailin, and there's a little bit of tension. Will Sansa recognize Reek? And then we see some probably empty promises of Ramsay to Baelish about not hurting Sansa. And we see a little bit of maybe what's going to happen here in the future with the North Remembers, right? From some handmaidens to Sansa.
A little bit of hinting.
And then we go back to King's Landing, and we see the High Septim is in a whorehouse. He gets humiliated by the sparrows.
First time we really see the sparrows in play.
Yeah, so we see what the sparrows are all about here. And then we see Cersei sending a message to Baelish and some Frankenmountain. We go back to Moat Cailin, where the message arrives. Ramsay's seen it, and he wants to know what Roose wants to know, or not Ramsay. Roose wants to know, sees it, and wants to know how Baelish is going to reply. We go to the road, or we go to Volantis. We go to Volantis, where we catch up with Varys and Tyrion. And Tyrion's basically defying Varys's recommendation of not leaving the box. They go out, they get drunk, find some whores that are impersonating the Dragon Queen. We find that the...
Is that flattery? You can say that flattery.
I don't know. They're cosplaying.
Imitation the, fire, right? Yeah.
We find some interesting links between a Red Priestess and Daenerys. And we see Jorah, and then we see Jorah kidnap Tyrion, and that's where the episode ends. All right, so we're going to get into some talking points here. We'll go back. And what did you think about all these scenes with, I think I skipped House of Black and White scene where Arya throws away or hides her last vestiges of Arya. So we'll go back to the House of Black and White. Overall, was there anything that interested you about these scenes with Arya in the House of Black and White?
Yeah, so I thought it very interesting was kind of metaphor was what was happening there when she's throwing away her stuff and she ends up hiding the sword. As if, you know, they kind of want her to give up her entire identity, right, when she becomes a faceless man.
Right, so she gives up her coins, which she stole.
Yeah.
Or which the Hound stole, right? She gives up her coins, she gives up her clothes, and then the last thing she attempts to throw in is Needle. But, I mean, really, all the other stuff, her clothes, the money, that's not Arya, but Needle is very much a part of Arya.
Yeah, very much a thread to her life before all this bullshit.
Right, I mean, Jon Snow. Needle was the beginning of Arya's adventure, really.
Yep.
So she got Needle, and then the Fursota Braavos, and has continued on from there. So, but she doesn't hide, or she doesn't throw Needle away, she hides it in a pile of rocks.
That makes me think that she's not going to fully give in to her faceless man training. As in, like...
Right. I don't think she's going to fully become a faceless man either.
Yeah.
But I bet she learned some tricks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
And
I don't think giving herself over to the cause fully is not going to happen. She's not going to give up everything.
So, I think someone's going to find that sword. I mean, they found the coin that she threw in the water.
That's true.
So, I think it's going to come back to haunt her. Yeah. Like, hey, you're not really about this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because what she's really about is revenge, and I don't know if that is the Faceless Men's game.
No, it doesn't seem like it.
So, I mean, they'll definitely kill some motherfuckers, but revenge is not...
As they said, they're for service. Ballard O'Harris.
That's right. Faceless Men most of all, right?
Yep.
And you said you didn't get that was a poison pool that the guy was drinking from.
No, I mean, maybe it was just because I don't know if it's just my television, like, contrast ratio, but that was really dark. And I don't know if it's... He says a new director.
Yeah, well, I mean, he drank it, then he died, so I guess... Well,
I knew that, like, after, obviously, when he died. I
right,
but,
okay.
But when he's, when they, that scene when they're holding the water or whatever, and he's giving it to him, I didn't think, it didn't occur to me immediately that it was poison.
Well, I don't know what else they hand out at the House of Black and White, other than death.
Other than death, yeah.
So that is the gift of the one god, right? Death.
Yep.
Now, they carry the bodies downstairs and they wash them, right? I don't know if they're prepping them for burial or what, but I wonder if their preparations of the dead are in any way linked to White Walkers.
That's a good question.
Because White Walkers can, basically, they don't resurrect them, but they control the dead, right?
Yeah.
They turn them into whites.
So you think that maybe that is a ritual or something that might...
Yeah, well, we don't see the end of it, right? Because Arya asked, what do you do after you bathe them? And the girl that gave her a hard time didn't answer.
Yep.
So I wonder if what they do plays a part in defending against White Walker magic.
Or feeds into it, maybe there.
Or feeds into it. But I don't... Because Melisandre is talking about, the red priestesses. Melisandre has obviously aligned herself against what's going on beyond the wall.
As far as we know, yeah.
She talks about that as being the biggest danger, right? Last season?
Yep.
So I'm thinking, even though it seems like every red priest or priestess has their own... agenda. So you have the guy that's with the Brotherhood, right? So it seems like the red priests and priestesses all have their own agenda, because you have the guy with the Brotherhood without banners.
Yeah. And Miss Melisandre.
And then we saw a new one in Volantis, which
And I still maintain that those, maybe they're not actually priestesses. Maybe they're own. Maybe they aren't actually worshiping a god. As in, like.
Well, they seem to be organized.
They do seem to be a bit organized, but maybe each one has their own kind of goal. That's what makes me think maybe it's like a witch's coven or something.
We'll come back to this when we talk about the next Red Priestess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I have questions about what they actually do with the bodies and if it's connected to the overall plot line with the White Walkers. Now, what about the goings-on in King's Landing? So it's the big power play between Margaery and Cersei, right? Do you think Cersei's going out without a fight?
No.
No fucking way.
And that's something, yeah, that's something I, what do you think is going to happen if Cersei doesn't leave King's Landing?
I don't know. She'll be, I think she'll end up fleeing, having to flee.
Gentle hints right now that she should be leaving. If that turns into something, I think that'll be, I think the pressure will slowly increase on her.
Do you think that she'll kill her own son?
You know, I wouldn't put it past her.
Like, by mistake or something. No. Wouldn't that be the ultimate?
Just to deny. As in, like, he's no longer my son because Margaery already took him and corrupted him, so.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a big possibility, and that's how she will die.
Yeah.
Same charge for the same crimes her imp brother were charged for. Regicide. Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would be crazy. That'd be hypocritical, even.
So Cersei's doing something. She's obviously playing some games here. So she imprisoned the former High Sept who was caught and humiliated by the Sparrows for doing some kind of weird Seven Gods thing at the whorehouse, right? When I first saw that, I was like, is that the guy officiating, right? The guy running the whorehouse? Somebody, I was like, that's a fake playing. Beard. Yeah, yeah, I was like, that's awful special effects. And then you were like, I think it's supposed to be that way. And I was like, oh, okay, I see.
They're obviously playing some kind of sex game.
Yes, yeah. They're playing some kind of sex game.
So. That dude's totally paying for sex games.
Yeah. So they ran him out, you know, practically tarred and feathered the guy, you know, whacking him in his penis as he's walking naked through the street and shit. But so she made some play with the old guy, the High Sparrow, right? Which is not really his title. It's just the thing, this title people have saddled him with, which he goes into the whole spiel about.
And this, I don't know if it's the actor or we've seen this guy before on.
He's a prolific actor, so I don't think we've seen him on Game of Thrones before, but he's played father figures and stuff like that on television series. And
dude just looks familiar.
Yeah, he's familiar. What is his real name? The whole episode, I mean, this is called The High Sparrow, so it's about, he is the namesake. Jonathan Pryce, that's The High Sparrow, and I know he's a prolific actor, he's been on many things before.
Always pretty good, if I can remember.
But what do you think, so Cersei basically disposes the current High Septum and then has this conversation with the High Sparrow about how religion, faith and the crown are the two pillars of the kingdom, right? If one falls, the other falls.
Yeah.
Do you think she really believes that? Hells no.
No.
Have you ever seen her pray to anything?
Nope. But didn't he mention something about, you know, what like, you falling? As in, like, are you the crown? I thought there was an interplay there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Her falling and, like, the crown falling.
But she's trying to form some alliance with...
What do you think her plans for the Sparrows are?
I don't know. You think that try to ostracize Margaery somehow via faith?
Yeah, or start like a war.
Get her in some kind of predicament?
Yeah.
Or divides the people? Because obviously lots of stupid people believe in God.
Well, I mean, even there you see some faiths prey on the desperate and weak more than they do others. And especially in that scene, you see, what kind of people do you see?
Oh, they're all
around the Sparrows.
Yeah, so the poorest, most impoverished people are here.
And they might have only looked that way because they have taken that vow of poverty to help other people.
Well, no, I think that some of them are.
They all gave away their shoes to help
people. So the clergy look that way because that's what they're doing. But the people that are there look that way because that's all they have.
Yeah. And that obviously will buy them, you know, faith and other things by doing that kind
secure
of stuff.
Their afterlife.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting what's going on in King's Landing.
I just wonder how Cersei thinks she can use them, and I don't see where she's going with the use of them. So obviously, they have some power, but so did... I mean, even when they were talking about the Sons of the Harpy in Meereen? Is it Meereen?
Yeah, it is Meereen.
They said, oh, looks like they've killed now. In one of the first episodes when they originally did kill that guy. As in, like, they knew they'd been around and then slowly built up to killing someone.
What does it have to do with the Sparrows?
Where are the Sparrows going?
Oh, do you think they're going to be assassins?
I mean, you have cult. I mean, you have
well, I thought for sure...
cults, the Sons of the Harpy and the Sons of the Sparrows.
I thought for sure the High Septum was going to end up found dead somewhere, but he wasn't. He was just humiliated. So yeah. I was surprised at that point that they didn't...
And they're sticking to that for now. For now, that's what I'm saying. That was the correlation I was trying to draw.
Well, the guy in charge, though, the High Sparrow, he seems, honestly, you know, his intentions are true and honest, it seems, noble.
Yeah, but he is not the zealot, the average zealot.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Usually takes things further than...
Because he even said that, right? So, you know, it's like... He's likened
the spark, but you can't really control the fire.
He likened what had happened as lancing a, you know, what had happened to the High Septum as lancing a boil, right? So it's always nasty and ugly when you lance a boil. But you could be more careful with the blade, is what he said. So I think that he didn't like what the people did and how they went about it, but it was needed to expose the corruption. Alright, so we leave the machinations of King's Landing, go to the machinations of Moat Cailin.
Oh, it's one thing I wanted to talk about more on the King's Landing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
Do you think Margaery will actually teach Tommen to be a good king, or do you think she's going to continue to manipulate the shit out of him and make him kind of...
I think it's
going to
be both. I think that... I haven't seen anything so far in Margaery that presents her as some cruel person. However, she's in it. She's in the Game of Thrones for power. That much is obvious, how they switched from Renly to the Lannisters, you know, who they backed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big political game, and that's what she's there for. But I think that she intends to, because, you know, she was talking about how he was the nicest king that ever lived.
She kept calling him sweet.
Right. The sweetest king that ever lived. So I think that she wants to keep that, and I think that she knows that the kingdom needs the face of the king. You know, basically he's going to be the face, and he's going to think, he's going to be a good king, but he's going to be a good king because that's what Margaery wants.
Yeah, and so she'll be pulling the strings behind the scenes to make sure that that happens. Or is she going to put a little spine in him?
Well, I think a little bit of both, because he has to have a spine to stand alone against Cersei.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And that's already shown. It's already shown that he's already getting a little bit of spine with his conversation with Cersei about going to Casterly Rock.
So I just wonder how far that's going to be taken.
Well, it's going to be until someone kills someone. Until Cersei is dead, Margaery is dead, or Tommen's dead. Or they're all dead.
We can hope for that, right?
Yeah. So, what do you think about...
I don't necessarily dislike Tommen, but...
I don't dislike Margaery either.
But
they're not the ones I'm betting on to win the Game of Thrones.
Ruthless people definitely end up on top more than often than not.
Moat Cailin. There's some interesting, deep, dark backstabbing shit that's going to happen here, right? So, Sansa did not want to come here initially to marry into the Boltons because the Boltons betrayed her brother.
Yep.
But Baelish was like, you know, you stop being a pawn or an observer when your dad died. So now you're in the game and you start being a player, basically, is what he said.
And basically, you can either ride the winds of fate or you can grab
it. Right, so you can always be in hiding or you can take this opportunity and get revenge, is what he says. Now...
What do you think he meant by revenge?
Revenge against the Lannisters, revenge against Boltons, revenge against everybody. I don't know what his endgame here is.
No, and...
He keeps me guessing. Yeah. What the fuck is Baelish's endgame? Because he used the Lannisters as a stepping stone, and now he's basically...
Or does he not consider Sansa enough of a threat in any way, shape, or form?
I think he recognizes Sansa as the keystone to power in the North.
Yeah.
She is. She's the last Stark... I mean, because Jon Snow is not a Stark.
But he specifically mentions revenge as if he's trying to push her into doing something. Now...
Yes.
If
he's sowing that seed.
If she marries Ramsay...
So, what this will do...
The Boltons.
That's right. So, technically, he is her uncle, right?
Yeah.
So, if he brings the Boltons back into the fold by having Sansa and Ramsay pair up... So, now they're all allied, right? The Eyrie... The North will back Sansa because of her name. Because you heard the conversation between Ramsay and Roose, right?
Yeah.
Hey, the Cailins or whoever didn't want to pay their taxes, so...
Cailins or something like that?
Yeah, so I skinned him and his brother and his mother or something like that in front of the youngest son, and the new lord paid his taxes. And that's when Roose brings up, hey, the way to win the North is not by skinning people, it's by marriage.
Because there are some pretty stubborn people. So
right.
Eventually,
well, Bear Island, right? Bear Island would only serve a Stark. And so...
That seems to be getting the message they're getting.
We're eventually going to see, because in a fortnight, Stannis Baratheon marches on Winterfell, which is currently held by the Boltons. So I wonder how the Stark name of Sansa is going to play in that battle against Baratheon. That'll be interesting. Second, what's she going to do with those crazy bitches?
The full crazy bitch harem that...
Yeah, that Ramsay's developed. The psycho murderers.
Yeah, because it showed one, and we knew there was at least one. And then it pans out and shows...
Well, there's at least...
Full group of them.
There was two, right? That they made out together and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So in front of Reek.
That's a whole other thing. Who knows? I don't know. There's not jealousy there.
So what do you think of Ramsay's promise to Baelish that she won't be hurt by him?
I think it was utter shit.
Maybe he's right. Maybe he won't hurt her and he'll just have other people do it.
I can't imagine he wouldn't want to take his own hand in that.
I don't know. Well, also, what's going to happen when Reek meets Sansa? Because it's going to happen. It's inevitable. They're in the same spot.
So, a question I had. Do you think that he was given orders, like Ramsay had told Reek, or Theon, basically, don't let Sansa see you, or do you think it was...
I don't think so. I think it's a mind...
himself.
Yeah, so Reek is embarrassed with himself. He doesn't want Sansa to see him and know what he's done.
And that was another question. Do you think Sansa knows that Theon took the North and basically supposedly killed Bran and Rickon?
So the news of Bran and Rickon surely reached King's Landing, and I think she knows full well that Theon betrayed Robb, and then the Boltons took Winterfell from the Greyjoys the same time that they betrayed him with Walder Frey at the Twins. Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
His stronghold. I think she's well aware of it all.
So you think that's more shame that's making Theon?
Yes. I think shame.
Hide his face from her?
Yeah, it'll be interesting how that all works out. And also, we see that there are people, the people of the North, support Sansa. We saw the chambermaid, the North remembers. So that's going to be a theme. The North remembers and how Sansa develops this contingent of the North remembers.
Do you think that will happen before or after the marriage?
After.
I'm really hoping it happens before.
Well, I think it needs to happen after because that solidifies ties. So once the Boltons is connected to Sansa, Sansa becomes a Bolton or whatever. Bolton Stark.
Oh, so it'll give her... So when the Boltons get offed, it'll give her full time.
It'll make her legitimacy. It'll make her the lady of the land.
Less them inheriting her stuff and more her inheriting all of theirs.
I can see Sansa turning during the Baratheon-Bolton conflict.
So you think another wedding? Another wedding?
No, I think... I don't think... Yeah, that's kind of been played. If there's another wedding massacre, it's... That thing is played out.
They very much glossed over the Margaery Tommen wedding.
Yeah, so we went from rape dancing at weddings to the rape dance wedding, the red wedding, the purple wedding. I think we're fucking done with special weddings where shit happens. So we move on to the war, or actually, still at Moat Cailin, bring up one point. I have one point about the Brienne and Pod thing. So we got a little bit of their backstory. Pod was a squire to a knight who stole a ham and shared it with him, and they were all going to be hung the next day. But Tywin, instead of hanging young Pod, he basically punished him by making him squire of Tyrion, which is a joke, right?
Yep.
Pod didn't see it that way. He sees it as like, wow, he's so kind and nice, Lord Tywin. Brienne's like, yeah, I don't, We get some Brienne backstory, so... How she met Renly and about how all the boys gave her a hard time, called her Brienne the Beauty because she was the ugliest girl on Earth, which I disagree with. I don't think she's all that ugly. And maybe it's that way in the books. I don't know. And then, so they kind of come to an understanding with each other, right? Acceptance. Even though Pod's already accepted her.
She's been pretty...
She finally accepts Pod.
She's been a bit bitchy to him so far.
So now they're actually going to start fighting. Even though she can't make him a knight... She'll make sure he learns how to fight. And he's like, that's the more important of the two anyways. But she vows to get vengeance for Renly, right?
Yep. She only has one target so far, and that's
Stannis. So do you think Brienne will ever meet Stannis in the field of combat? Whoa, 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 soon. Here we go. Sansa, Ramsay, tie the knot. Brienne shows up after Baelish leaves, pledges herself to Lady Bolton, Sansa Bolton.
And saves her from the crazy bitch harem.
And kills Stannis.
I'm all for that.
We'll see. And then helps her basically overthrow the family she married into.
Yep. I can see that happening.
I like that route, kind of. So,
now here's the interesting thing. So Stannis is marching on Winterfell, but the Boltons are at at Moat Cailin. So they're obviously going to know that Stannis invaded Winterfell.
Yes.
So they're going to be prepared.
Moat Cailin is like a prime territory, right?
It's like the
strategic
spot between the north, like the bottleneck between the north and, or the north and the south.
Okay.
Is from what I've.
Yeah, they'll definitely. I mean, they have crows, right? So they'll get wind that somebody's marching on Winterfell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if they can raid, because they don't have any support from the Lannisters anymore. I don't know how they're going to... And
who's running Winterfell right now?
Some stooge of Bolton's.
Yeah, how effective do you think they're going to be at stopping Stannis?
I don't know.
You think Stannis just roll through there?
I don't think that he's just going to roll through there, but we'll see. It'll be interesting how that all plays out. So at the Wall, we see Jon in his new position as Lord Commander. And he seems to be filling out pretty well, right?
Yep.
What I find interesting about the scene is that it actually comes full circle with the full first season and his father, I say in quotes, dead Ned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, at the beginning of the series, Ned Stark beheaded a member of the Night's Watch because he left his post, right? And, you know, I think it was Jon Snow kind of, you know, like, well, he was, what if what he said is true? And he's like, well, you know, it doesn't matter. He betrayed his post, right? So, no mercy. And then we see Janis defying the Lord Commander, right? Because he said, hey, you need to go out to Greykeep, or whatever the hell it's called, and start rebuilding it. I guess all by his lonesome. You know, you just need to do stuff out there.
And this kind of goes back to why I didn't consider like Jon Snow that interesting of a character. Like you know, when I was talking about the Viper being killed and all that, I said there was no one really left to root for in the actual Game of Thrones. And the reason I didn't put Jon Snow in contention for that is because if he had abandoned his oaths, he would have been less of a character in my eyes. Like, that would have axed my likability of him.
If he had abandoned his oaths?
Yeah, if he had abandoned his oaths.
So if he didn't have honor. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because that basically gives him all that crap without all the, basically, the rigidness and the stuff.
We see several points of honor here, right? So yeah. One, he denies Stannis' offer of legitimacy.
And Stannis even says, you're exactly like Ned.
Right, and he's like, well, thank you. He's like, I'm not saying it's a compliment. No, his honor is what killed him, right? But, you know, I can dig that. And then we see what interaction.
Right. And you even called it. You're like, hey, Davos and John moment. Yes.
Yes. So, you know, an interaction that I've been waiting for, though I think we've both been waiting for, is Davos and John. And Davos finally has an opportunity to be frank with John. He's like, hey, he sees something in you, which is, you know, saying something, first of all. Second of all, you have a duty to, you know, to make sure that the people are, you know, that the kingdom is ruled by the, you know, because Davos' theory is that he's the one true heir to the throne, and until we have one king again, no pretender, is that nothing but pain and suffering is going to come to Westeros, right? Which is kind of true.
Yeah.
But if they're, you know, if all the other pretenders, like Stannis and Bolton and whoever else, would just settle down and pledge their fealty to Tommen, then they'd do the same thing. But whatever. So, but Davos is like, look, and he talks to the young kid, right, that killed.
He has him repeat the oath.
Ygritte, right? So he's like, not that part, the very last part, where he's like, you know, and shield against, you know, the shield, right?
And
shield that guards the realms of men.
And how good is a shield without an arm holding it? Without backing, without
grace. Well, basically, Davos gives Jon a reinterpretation of his oath that allows him to act and still do with honor. It wouldn't be abandoning his oath. Yes, they're the Watchers on the Wall. Yes, they're the Sword in the Darkness. They got to defend, right? But they're also the shield that protects the realms of men. So they're duty-bound to protect the realms of men, and that would give Jon a huge...
Even from themselves.
Right, a huge... a huge opening for him to operate the Night's Watch in. You know, exactly what can we do here?
Yep.
Traditionally, we've only been at the Wall. But when it comes down to it, if the survivability of the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros depends on the unity of Westeros, which it does, because if they're all scattered doing their own little thing when the White Walkers come down, then there's no hope. They have to present a unified front to defeat the White Walkers. They're that important of a threat.
Yeah, and he...
To get that to happen, they need to be underneath one guy.
Well, I see that. So that's the one thing, because Davos gives him that, but he obviously is rooting for Stannis. Like, he's sworn to Stannis.
Well, that's true, but That's because Davos hopes that John will see it as you need to support this guy. But I'm not saying that. I'm not saying he needs to support Stannis Baratheon.
No. Yeah.
I'm saying that he needs to unite the South. He needs to unite the South. And I'm saying underneath John.
I agree.
And
I'd like to see that happen.
Well, you know, so that's it. And the other part of the honor that we see here, so he's maintaining his oath to Night's Watch. He also follows through on the treason, right? Mutiny.
Yep.
He beheads Janice, because Janice is like, I'm not going to the Great Keep. You can take that and shove up your ass. And he's like, he gives him every out, right? It's like, so you're not going to go? You're going to defy the command, you know, the command of the Lord Commander?
He gives him multiple chances.
To right. And he's like, no, fuck you. And then he thinks that Alistair is going to
stand up and split the Night's Watch.
So he wavers, right?
Yeah. Is if Alistair had stood up there, he would have split the Night's Watch. And this is the whole thing. John is honorable, right? So I can never see him being petty enough to even like when they're
right. Alistair Thorne was always going to play within the rules, right?
Yeah.
He was hoping to give John enough rope to hang himself.
Yeah.
That's what he was hoping for.
At every opportunity he did that, but he never, at no point did he.
And if he would have become, you know, the Lord Commander, he probably would have sent John off to do some stupid shit like that, too. Like John did to, except for John recognized Alistair, made him First Ranger. He's like, look, you're still a trusted warrior, you know all sorts of shit, and it goes back to keeping your enemies close, right?
Yeah.
And Stannis made a great comment, he's like, well, you've never had many enemies. Whoever said that never had many enemies.
He's not wrong. The first scene they were talking about, you know, digging into the train pits, and there was obviously the threat of him sending Alistair to do so.
But he didn't.
No.
They sent the ginger.
That's so... Yeah, that would be way better.
And everybody thought it was funny. They're like, even the ginger thought it was funny. Okay, yeah. So I think John's... First of all, I think his first foray as Lord Commander has turned out well.
Yep.
I mean, other than, you know, somebody mutinying against him. But,
I think we mentioned that last time, too, is I always felt he would give Alistair at least some value position.
Yeah, he's not going to dismiss Thorne. Like, again, he has too much honor.
Yeah.
So Thorne never acted fully, like, it's not like Thorne came up and tried to stab him in the back. He just didn't think he was good enough to be Lord Commander or even part of the Night's Watch, for that matter. So he grants Alistair Thorne, I guess, a coveted position, you know, the First Ranger. That's a big deal. But then Janice is like, well, fuck you. You know, you're not going to lord me around, Lord Commander. And then while he's begging for mercy. So John lets him, he's like, if you have any last words, here it is.
Janice totally misread that rule.
Yeah. He was giving him opportunity to say his last words. And then pop, off comes his head. Which brings us full circle back to Ned, right? So dead Ned.
And again, the honor thing, he knows when to show mercy and when to show
strength. Well, even Stannis kind of gave him the two thumbs up, right?
Yeah.
Over there, nodded his head like, yeah, that's the way you do it, dude. Cause, yeah, there's no room, because once you... If he would have gave him mercy, then all sorts of other people would have mutinied.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to do that. Why would I do that? Well, because you're going to get your head fucking chopped off. You know?
There's a clear boundary set here.
So I think we've covered every place except for Varys and... Tyrion.
I wanted to swing back to the Night's Watch thing. Do you think Jon is going to do something like they're suggesting and swing south?
Something is going to happen. So Stannis left the wildlings in his care, so he can do whatever he wanted.
That's another thing. What do you think he's going to do with the wildlings? I think they're going to become part of the Night's Watch.
In
exchange for land.
I think, okay, so I think something still has to happen to catalyze that. So they're going to be attacked by White Walkers.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what's going to happen. They're going to be attacked by White Walkers, and they're going to have to retreat, and then they're going to have to work together to survive. So I think nominally they'll serve underneath him, but it's going to be a whole different dynamic than what Stannis Baratheon would have been.
Yep,
because he's going to treat them like people, and probably grant them the same thing that Stannis did, but it wouldn't be like you have to bend a knee.
Yeah,
you take up arms with me, and I'll promise that you get some space in the north.
I can totally see that.
So it's not like you don't have to bend a knee; we just have to agree.
So you think that the reason they're going to end up going south is less because they're going to conquer it, and more because they're retreating.
Yes, I do. Because they can't handle it all by themselves. I think they pretty much established that. First of all, there's not that many Night's Watch left.
No.
There's not enough. I mean, all the wildlings are on this side. They're prisoners, quotes, air quotes. But fuck, how many of them?
How many Night's Watchmen are left? can they hold that many prisoners?
Right. Well, he's already said he can't feed them.
Yeah, you get 10 times the number of prisoners than there are guards.
What's going to happen is they're being held prisoner. The White Walkers are going to attack. He's going to have to... He's basically like, look, I'm setting you free. He's like, please stand with us.
I can see that.
And then I bet you for anything, Tormund Giantsbane, or Giants Killer, whatever his name is going to be like, I'm with you, or whatever. But they're going to have to retreat, I think. So strength in numbers. And I think, you know, John's already started healing that bridge between them by giving mercy to Mance.
Yeah.
So I think they all respected that.
And maybe word will get around to what happened to Janice, and they'll give him a, so he can show strength as well as mercy.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm very excited about what's happening at the Wall. Very excited.
Yeah.
Once I start seeing, I'm not even, I used to really like what Arya was doing, but I see that they're going to be, draw that process out.
That's why I couldn't root for her either. Yeah. She's off, she's traveling, she's doing her own thing. Bran and them are all doing their own
there's
thing.
There's a lot of slow buildup and it's pissed me off, but I'm still really excited about what's happening at the Wall. So, and I hope very soon in the next 2 episodes, some huge catalyst comes down that brings the Wildlings and Jon and the Night's Watch together. For real. But how about Volantis?
That was an interesting shot. I don't think we've... Have we seen that city?
We've not seen Volantis before, to my knowledge. But it's obviously...
It looked like a bridge city. It was all one bridge, wasn't it? It looked like very narrow spaces. And...
Well, I think that particular part was, but it looked like it was very spread out. So there's obviously a slave market, right? And all the slaves are identified by their skills.
And
so,
stamped.
Yeah, branded. So they're tattooed on their cheeks. Whores have tears, you know, like carpenters have hammers, people who shovel shit have shovels on their, you know, whatever. But
obviously Dany has not been here yet. Been here.
She's heard, she's been, they hear about her though, right? Because we have a Red Priestess.
Yep.
And she's talking about what? About the Dragon Queen. She's their what?
What herald? She's like some kind of herald.
She's their savior. Savior was the word in.
When did the fire priests?
That is, I don't know. So
become
okay,
heralds for Daenerys.
So she was born in fire. So she obviously has an affinity with fire. So I can see that kind of thing going. So this, I wonder if this particular priestess sees her as the savior, the herald, or whatever that's coming.
I wonder if prophet. They don't have prophecies like.
Maybe
they have prophecies, and she's.
She survived the fire. She brought back the dragons.
She fits their canon or their...
We're definitely... I mean, they spend a lot of time on her face. She's not just a mook. I think we'll be seeing her again.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I think she's going to be one of the... Another main character.
Right. So they visit a whorehouse, and we see that there's Horus cosplaying as the Dragon Queen, right? They have bright white hair.
Is that imitation is flattery? I don't know.
I don't know how... I don't think Dany would, like, have them killed for doing it.
No, because it's not, like, their fault.
Right. It's... Yeah, it's interesting. But who do we see at the bar?
That's Jorah.
Jorah! He's drinking it up at the bar. And then we're like, hey, is that Jorah? And we're like, yeah. And then the dwarf goes to take a piss.
Jorah kidnaps him.
And he's kidnapped. And he says what? Where's he taking him?
He's taking him to the queen.
So, and then your question was, but what queen?
That was my question. I didn't.
So, here's the thing.
Because he did work.
The queen.
He was working for King's Landing.
That's true. So, I guess it depends on who, how much information do you think Jorah has? Has word gotten back that Margaery is the queen? Or is he talking about Cersei or Dany?
There's a lot of queens now. To
be. Who do you think?
I think, I don't know, because it seems like Jorah's kind of hit rock bottom there.
I personally think he's talking about Daenerys. He thinks the dwarf will be her ticket, be his ticket back in her good graces.
I call it 50-50 Daenerys Cersei.
Okay.
Because I feel like Jorah has kind of hit rock bottom. And I can see him becoming now sort of a villain, lying with Cersei and kind of like...
No, he's always... He seems like he's always had his heart in the right place. I think he's still infatuated with Daenerys. He thinks this will be his ticket back in her good graces.
That's one, like, she's... I don't know. She came down kind of hard on Jorah for something that, you know, she seems a bit hypocritical in regards to Jorah and some things.
Refresh our memory. What did she come down hard on Jorah about?
Because, didn't she find out he had lied about having attachments to King's Landing?
Yes. So
she couldn't forgive him.
He was originally tasked with her helping assist the assassination plot, right?
Yeah.
But then he changed his mind.
So he was just spying on her. And...
Right. So, but then he changed his mind, and it was totally like, this... You know, you're the next one who should sit on the throne.
I feel like words are one thing, actions are another, and he had not shown any ill will.
Yeah.
But I think this will... I think he's hoping that this will prove he's like, look, I got a Lannister. They want him dead. So, you know.
I don't think we've seen anything of him to this point.
Nope.
So now the question is...
I kept saying that he'd be coming back on Drogon, but he didn't. No. He's going to come back on Tyrion.
There's still a chance.
You said Tyrion's going to ride Drogon.
I think that might be... Maybe they'll both ride Drogon together. On the way back to Daenerys.
You know, there was a certain light when he's talking to that whore, you know, that we couldn't get it up. Tyrion, he couldn't get it up. And he's like, what would I do in my free time? That sucks. But he's talking to the whore, and then in a particular lighting with that beard, I was like, holy shit, he looks like Chuck Norris. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Like Tyrion.
Texas Ranger.
Texas, yeah, Essos Ranger.
Yeah.
I totally want him to do some kung fu moves and karate.
Yeah. But as to Jorah, I think it's either he's still infatuated with Dany, wants to go back, or...
That's what it is.
Completely heartbroken, like, completely disenchanted, and is now...
So, he's so disheartened that he's going to turn against her.
Yeah.
I don't think so. We'll see, though.
Yeah, because they haven't...
Because I can't see them bringing Tyrion all the way out here and then sending him back to King's Landing.
Well, I'm not saying he's going to make it back to King's Landing.
Oh, that's true.
Because there's a lot can happen in between.
You're right.
And Varys isn't one to just give up a tool that he's got.
Yeah, Varys is going to arrive right after him in Meereen.
Yeah.
Tyrion is going to be what gets Daenerys out of Meereen.
Maybe. I can see that.
Mm.
I'm super excited for Varys, though. He's becoming quickly... I'm glad he's getting a lot more screen time, and I really hope... He's now becoming one of my favorite heroes. I think he's going to be...
A hero.
I'm going for Hero Varys.
Mm. Well, the only thing I'm super excited about right now is the wall. The next thing I'm super excited about is hopefully Sansa kills Ramsay Bolton. And then I wish they'd speed up Arya's storyline. Seriously, just skip ahead to where she's a faceless man.
I think...
Speed that storyline along.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So, you heard from a listener that one of the last book, Dance of Dragons, they're actually at the end of his storyline.
Close to the end of I can't remember which character, but they're...
What
close
was the listener's name?
Brian, my former roommate.
That's right.
He mentioned...
Well, I figure we got to call him out.
Yeah, he'll enjoy that. Hi, Brian. Anyway, yeah, he mentioned they're getting close to the end of the content for certain characters' story arcs, right? So... It seems more and more likely we'll hit some of that by the end of the season. At least new content that's not in the books. And I don't see the book coming
out. Did he happen to say who storyline it was?
I can't... No, I don't think so.
Trying to keep you in the dark.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I kind of asked him to do that, and he's been pretty good about it. Because I know he's read the books. And I want to say it is Tyrion's, but I can't.
So Christine was talking to me on Twitter about Bronn, and she's very pleased to see Bronn back in action, and hopes that he stays safe by Jaime's side.
I agree.
So
I don't necessarily want to
keep Jaime
safe.
Those two are some powerful... Those two together are some powerful, you know, like, they would kill lots of people together.
I definitely agree with that. Bronn is straight up a killer. He's not necessarily a swords, but he's not, like, he's
but
a killer.
But Jaime's a killer, too.
Eh.
He killed the fucking king.
Yeah, but...
I don't... They haven't established, so that they were showing his progression in becoming a lefty, right?
Yeah.
With the sword last season, but they didn't really establish how good he was. And Bronn was his teacher, right? So Bronn was training him to fight.
You haven't really seen him do much fighting.
I hope that we get to that soon, and they take on some sand snakes, and there's lots of mayhem. We need some mayhem.
We do need
and bloodletting.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll come soon. At the very least, we'll see probably some stuff.
We need some big battles, too.
With
Boltons
Stannis.
And
yeah.
Baratheons. All right, is there anything else you want to cover?
I just want to... So that was the difference between... I mean, you even see when Bronn was teaching Jaime. It's like, he even told him, you know, you either win or you die, basically.
Right.
And he
so same thing with the Game of Thrones.
Tricked him a couple times.
Yes. Yeah.
So I wonder how much of that Jaime picked up, because it seems like Bronn would use any tool he has to win.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, he's no knight.
No. And I wonder how much of that Jaime's picked
There's
up.
There's no rules. Because you're right, it's either you win or you die.
Because clearly Jaime's still at a disadvantage no matter what, with only one hand.
And we still haven't seen anything from Bran.
No.
Or Osha.
I wonder how much...
Did we even see anything of Osha last season?
No, we haven't seen... Not since she separated from Randall, yeah. We've seen anything of Osha.
So I don't think we will. Are they even part... I guess, yeah.
I don't think we will.
Like, does Rickon come back on the back of a dragon somewhere?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much written out.
Yeah, I think he's out.
It's weird. I guess I keep expecting at least to see a final...
Or at least a rumor
note.
Or something.
Yeah. Also, something I haven't talked about this season. So we know that resurrection is possible. Who could be resurrected?
Well, obviously the mountain.
We saw him.
Some Franken mountain.
Yes. So he jerked around on the table, right? And Dr. Frankenstein was like...
We've not seen anything more about the Brotherhood without banners.
No, we haven't. Speaking of resurrection.
So, yeah. Especially speaking of resurrection. We haven't seen shit about them. What role do they now play? And have they just disappeared?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they'll go up against Frankenmountain.
Or I think...
Mountainstein.
For some reason, I feel like they're connected with the Sparrows. But that's probably not the case.
I don't think so.
Because especially since they are connected to the Lord of Light. Whatever, Lord of...
Well, the Lord Sparrows seem to be connected to the Seven, right?
Yeah.
They're about the Seven, not about... One god. Yeah. They're not monotheistic. Or at least that's not the impression I've gotten. Well, I think that about does it for this cast.
Yeah.
Hey, let us know what you think about the new format. If you like us doing the fast cap and then just going into the things that we really want to talk about. Or if you like being handheld all the way through the episode, which we're not going to do again no matter what your feedback is.
I guess we spend about the same amount of time.
We want to hear your bitching and moaning or your praise and thanks. But regardless, I think this is... Yeah, we probably did, but I like it better this way because then we actually just talk about what we want to talk about in one stretch.
Less
interruption
between
that. So let us know what you think. I'm your host, Michael.
I'm your host, Jesse.
And this has been the Faceless Men podcast following HBO's Game of Thrones television series. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/facelessmencast, on Twitter at facelessmencast. You can reach us at Gmail, facelessmencast@gmail.com, and you can find us on Google+, Facelessmencast.
Valor Amargulis.